this interview is actually taking place because after the events of this weekend, specifically the first event with Caron Nazario in Virginia being pulled over, I decided that I wanted to talk, that Rachel and I, it would be good for us to talk to some police officers to try to figure out what's going on with policing in America. Like, incidents like this happen all the time, and we talk amongst ourselves, but it seems like we're caught up in this never-ending cycle. And so I wanted to talk to cops about this. And unfortunately, while I put out that request, another, dare I say, well, definitely more serious incident happened in Minnesota, where 20-year-old Dante Wright was killed by a police officer who apparently they're saying she thought she was going for her taser. She went for her weapon. She shot him once. He died. So, two gentlemen responded to me. A lot of cops did, but I checked out some of these guys' stuff, and I thought it was pretty interesting. They had an interesting perspective. Detectives Ralph Horton and Dre Severino. Am I getting that right? Yes, sir.
Detective Dre Severino.
Detective Dre Severino of the Baltimore Police Department. They're also hosts of a podcast called The Silverback Chronicles. Watched a little bit of the podcast in this podcast. Rachel, did you watch any of it?
I saw a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of it, where you guys said that not all cops are bad cops. And you wanted to do the podcast to be able to prove that to people. It's, to be honest with you guys, becoming increasingly more difficult to believe that. So I guess what I'll ask you guys right now, before we even get into the nuts and bolts of this, is what is a good cop at this point?
Well, I'll start off first. You're looking at him. I'll tell you why. Because we were born and raised in New York City, Long Island. We know what it is to grow up with police officers. We know what it is to get out and do community policing. See what I'm saying? We never wanted to be treated a specific way. So when we police, we treat everyone with the utmost respect.
Mm. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You know, the biggest thing nowadays is community policing. We've been doing that since we got on the job. You know, there's nothing like getting out of your patrol car, going to speak to a business owner, or going to a hot block and talking to the guys on the block, just so they can get familiar with who you are. And it's all about respect. I mean, it's a rat race. They know what we're here for. You know, and it's not nothing crazy what we're doing. But you build that respect by getting out of your car, speaking to them like a man. Hey, how you doing? My name is Officer Horton. Yeah, I just got on the job. I've been here for, you know. Once they see your mannerisms and they see your dialect, they know you're not from that area. So how do you break that down? By being real with them. Yeah, I'm from New York. I have fun. What do you like to do?
So I no doubt believe what you two are saying about yourselves. But then I think where what Van and I struggle with, and what a lot of people struggle with, is you're a part of this bigger system. And it, as Van said in his introduction, it seems to be this never-ending cycle where you're afraid to look at the news or a notification because it seems like it doesn't stop happening. So for us, as Black people, as citizens in this country, how do we continue to have faith in the system that you're a part of, the system as a whole?
Well, you know, unfortunately, it's unfortunate, but it's individuals that make the badge look bad. It's not the whole department. And with these two incidents that happened, you know, one person lost his life yesterday afternoon. That's horrible. That's horrific.
May he rest in peace.
Absolutely. God bless his soul.
Our condolences to his family.
But more, you know, at the root of it all, that's training. That's training within that department. Those officers they weren't trained to go out there and handle that situation the way it should have been handled accordingly. And that's the sad part of policing.
Like for example, when we have our tasers on one side and we have our hand weapon on the other side, so that confusion doesn't happen.
I mean, every department has their policies and procedures. You know, right. And I'm speaking as Ralph Horton. I'm speaking as Detective Horton, even though I do it as a profession. Now, I don't know what their policies and procedures are, but I know policing. And getting out, just like the incidents that happened in, was in Virginia, with the second lieutenant. That situation was disgusting. And when we read the report online, it's insane how he could justify that calling it a high-risk car stop. I taught in the academy. That's not a high-risk car stop at all. Even when he wrote in his report that they were driving slow. So I consider that a high-risk car. That's not a high-risk car stop. So check it. Even if he said it's a high-risk car stop, right? He put in there, the individual was eluding police. Okay, cool. You conducted a car stop, right? What did your investigation lead you to once you got on scene and started talking to that individual? Where's the threat? Why is there a need for pepper spray? For what? The man has his hands out of the window and he's complying with you. At the end of the day, you still haven't addressed yourself as an officer. You still didn't completely conduct the car stop by saying, sir, how you doing? My name is so-and-so. I'm from this police department. The reason for the stop is none of that was conducted. So therefore, they was doing their own thing. Not even abiding by the policies and procedures set forth for them in that department.
Right. So
they need to go.
Right. So this is my thing. And I'm going to be transparent with you guys. You guys said on Twitter that I had to be ready for the real when we're going to have this conversation. And you guys are giving off real energy. So I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think there are any good cops.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. The reason why I don't think there are any good cops is because we're talking about several different instances here of situations to where training seemed to be either insufficient, okay, or that the training wasn't followed. And that doesn't even get me started on another situation that's happening in Minnesota where Derek Chauvin put his knee on the back of George Floyd's neck for over 9 minutes and George Floyd died. Later on for us to find out that he's not supposed to be doing that, okay? So apparently, the training doesn't matter because we're looking at different parts on the map. We're talking about Virginia. We can go back as far as Eric Garner. We can talk about anywhere where these things happen and cops are doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
To me,
the thing that keeps citizens safe against police who are armed, right, is standards. And it seems to me that the cops in situations like this aren't adhering to those standards. So explain to me what's not happening then. Like, what's not working? Because a lot of these things, you said before that it's unfortunate. It's not unfortunate. It's tragic. He's dead. So, and that's because somebody is mistrained. To me, it seems like policing is something that needs to be taken apart in America. Am I wrong?
Van, I wouldn't even say it's mistraining. That comes down to the individual at that moment. Because the training has kept him and I safe, and everyone that comes across in this violent, really violent city of Baltimore City, where we can go to any hood, we can go to any neighborhood, and be fine. Why? Because we treat people with respect. Now there's certain circumstances where things get a little hectic, right? If you listen to our podcast, we were the first ones to say what happened with, please give me his name. With Mr. Floyd, may he rest in peace. That was absolutely wrong. We never treated anyone in that manner. So I will say it comes down to the individual who's not trusting his training.
And, you know, it's a sad part because people get used to policing their way instead of what they adhered to, what they signed into to do and be followed out every day, all day. And those are the stigmas. Those are the rotten apples of the departments. Like, there's individuals that made those individual choices.
How many rotten apples does it take for the whole tree to be rotten?
I agree with you. I agree 1,000% with you. But there's more great officers out there than bad ones. There's so much violence that goes on day in and day out that you don't even hear.
So right. What's in place, though, for, I guess, we hear you. And I do believe that there are good cops. But my thing is when you see bad behavior or you see a pattern from a particular officer, what's in place to make another officer who is a good cop feel like they can put tell on that cop or report that cop for what they're doing, because I feel like that's what's not happening. I'm sure you see people on the force right now who you know are not doing things the way that they're supposed to. So where do the good cops fall in holding those cops accountable to avoid the tragic incident that happened today and what has continued to happen in this country?
I agree with you, and I'm with you 100%. A lot of them don't have the testicular fortitude to say no. Like that instance that happened in Virginia, the secondary officer
knew he was wrong.
Told that, I'm sorry?
The younger cop knew he was wrong.
That's what I'm telling you. He should have told, he should have pulled his partner and be like, yo, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? If you see a guy that's in service and he's complying, he has his hands out the window and he's talking to you, where's the threat level? And he wasn't talking to you in a high-pitched voice. He's talking to you calm, and you're still raising the situation with from a 5 to a 10. There's no need for that. There's no need for that at all. That's disgusting. That's not what we signed up for. That's not why we do the job. And that's why our podcast was created, because we are bridging the gap. And I agree with you. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of officers out there just putting a bad stain on this badge. Because people forget, even those officers forget, it's a privilege to do what we do. We put our lives on the line every day, all day. I take pride in that shit. So when I see a dirty officer, I'm gonna slap his ass up and I'm gonna send him so he can get jammed up. There's no need for that.
We tell him you can't work with us because we're not doing that. There's been instances that we pulled people. You know, sometimes you get in the heat in the battle, whatever may happen, you get a gun, somebody may point a gun at you. And once the cuffs are on, the fight is over.
It's over.
But you know, we're human and you're still like emotional, like, wow, this guy almost killed me. But you have to rely on your partners to say, hey, stop. It's over. It's done. We're good. Everybody's good. All lives are saved. It's a gun arrest. He's going to go to jail. You're right. You got paperwork. See what I'm saying? And that's what we're trying to
do
always...
Do you guys believe that there is systemic racism inside of policing?
There's racism everywhere in this country.
Okay, so I'm talking specifically about as it relates to policing right now. Baltimore obviously had a situation with Freddie Gray some time ago. The reason why I'm telling you guys about this is because we're dealing with two situations right here that involve car stops. All right, Black men are significantly more likely to be stopped by the police in America than are white men. Of their same age. Black men at 25 years of age are significantly more likely to be stopped by police officers than white men of their same age, and less likely to contraband is less likely to be found on Black men being stopped in that same during that of that age than it is of their white counterparts. So it seems to me that no matter where you go, there is a real problem in policing with over-policing Black people. We have two car stops that we're talking about right now. Both of them not serious at all. One of them ends in a death. The other one ends in the degradation and macing, pepper spraying of a man. Or is there something in policing that is unfairly targeted towards Black people?
Hell no. Let me tell you something.
So you're telling me right now that with everything that we're seeing, because you don't think in any way that Black people are unfairly targeted by the police.
It's documented. It's a fact that is true. And that's a fact. I'll give you that. But
well, he just said no. You just said yes.
It's documented that is true. More Blacks are stopped. But from my perspective, I don't see it that way. Not what we deal with. I can't talk about every jurisdiction and what they go through. I can talk about what I go through and what we see in one of the worst cities in America.
So in my perspective, to answer your question, it's a numbers game, right? Here in Baltimore, predominantly the city is 90% Black.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have more Black people stopped. But let's talk about middle America, right? Whereas a white officer stopping a white driver, that never makes the papers because it's not sexy. You see what I'm saying?
What do you mean by that?
I'm sorry?
When you say a white officer stopping a white person, for what, why, right. When, where, how?
Right. I mean, it happens all across the country, right? But when it happens in major cities...
He's just saying it's not heavy.
That's the clickbait. That's the clickbait. See what I'm saying? Because it happens all across this country where in Wyoming, there might be somebody being stopped, and it's predominantly white officers stopping a white person. It just doesn't make the national news because it's not that sexy.
I'll give you another situation, Rachel, as well. An officer from New Mexico just got killed. He conducted a car stop, did everything right. Besides stick to his training. He told an individual, can you please give me the AR rifle that I see next to you? Can you get out of the car and give it to me? And when he got out of the car, do you think he gave it to him? He gave it to him. He shot him up. And the officer died right there on the scene. Now, if he was better trained, he would not advise that individual to get out of his vehicle and hand him over an AR rifle. Now, that's a training flaw, and unfortunately, it cost him his life. Now, that just happened. I don't see nobody talking about that. And that happened in New Mexico. So what I'm saying is, when I relate it back to these issues, it's individuals making their own personal choice. It's not the department at all.
Can I answer the reason why that might not be being... Rachel, first of all, I don't...
No, go ahead. No, answer the question. Go ahead.
Can I answer the reason why that might not be being talked about? So here's the thing. And I don't mean to be crass when I say this. Police officers have a very dangerous job. Anytime any life is lost anywhere, it is a tragedy. Police officers walk around society with guns. They're trained, supposedly, in de-escalation. They're trained, supposedly, in crisis situations. They're trained to handle these things. People who are on their way home, coming from the grocery store, going to pick up their kids, they're not. So when you see them die in situations, criminals kill police officers kill citizens, both criminals and not criminals. If somebody pulls out an AR-15 and shoots up a cop, what is the headline supposed to be? The cop didn't follow his training. He got killed by a criminal who wanted to kill a police officer. But if a father or a mother or a son gets into an incident with someone who is supposed to be specifically trained in how to handle that incident, and they end up dead, well, then obviously people are going to ask questions about how far and how well American policing goes and works. And I'm going to be real with you. I haven't heard any answers to any of these questions, not from you guys and not from the people that we talk to every single time we have this conversation. We're talking about the fact that officers aren't trained well. Well, what we got to do to train them well?
Well, that's the thing. I said they are trained, but at the end of the day, it boils down to them being an individual and making an individual decision as towards being an agent of your department and acting accordingly to the law set forth in that department. I can't tell you why he did what he did. I can only tell you they need better training. As for the gentleman, the 20-year-old that passed away yesterday, I saw the video on that.
It was disgusting.
It was disgusting. And the thing was, he complied. He got out of his car and he had his hands behind his back. The officer failed to put the cuffs on him correctly. And then when his partner came, that's when the individual tried to steal, go inside the vehicle and pull off.
He didn't bring him to the back of the car either.
What the officers should have done, they should have pulled him out of the patrol car, out of his personal car like he did, instead of cuffing him right there at the front door. He should have took him to the back of the car, searched him, cuffed him. That's it. No harm, no foul.
There's no need for all that extra stuff.
Shoulda, woulda, couldas aren't helping what's happening right now in our country. And I think that's what's so frustrating and where Van is coming from, too. I hear y'all keep saying it's an individual and you keep saying they don't have enough training. But obviously saying those things isn't fixing the problem. And so we're at a place right now where we're tired of being told, you know, like, calm down and trust the system. We're tired of being told, hey, that's a rotten apple. We're tired of being told they weren't trained properly because none of that is saving lives. People are still out here dying unnecessarily. So my question to you is, you both, is then what can be done? Because just blaming it on training or blaming it on a certain individual isn't fixing the problem. It's a systematic problem, right? That's, you know, like, that's why we say it's systemic. That is how you have to admit that, because it's continuing to happen within this system. So in your opinion, what should happen to hold these officers accountable when they lack proper training, or when they're a rotten individual within the system? Because it's got to be more than just suspension, than just firing, and then they can go to another, join somebody else's force, which is why we're right now fighting this whole qualified immunity thing. I really would love your opinion on whether or not you agree there should be a qualified immunity, what should happen to an officer when they do something like this, when they're rotten, when they don't do the proper training, especially with Dante Wright, who it was a senior, quote, a very senior officer who pulled a trigger and shot him instead of pulling the taser.
So you can speak on the qualifier, right? But I just want to add this into the mix, right? We're dealing with individuals, right? Now, Van, let me ask you a quick question. What terrifies you? Are you scared of snakes? Like, what terrifies you?
I'm scared of snakes. I'm scared of cops. That's what terrifies
okay,
me.
Okay, cool. All right. And ma'am, what scares you?
I'm going to agree with Van. The police. Okay,
fine. So here you have each individual. I get you go with cops. Everyone has a different threat assessment. And a lot of people are not put into a position. I believe Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face, right? There's certain people that are put into certain situations that they don't know how they're going to react until it happens. Do you understand what I'm saying?
That's, are you talking about the police? Because the police are trained for these situations.
No. I'm talking on a human level. On a human level, whether we're police officers or...
Don't accept it. And I don't accept it. I think it's dangerous and getting people killed. The reality is the police, we are feeding billions of dollars of taxes all over this country into training police officers so negative. They know what to do. So, and the reality is, nobody wants to talk about creating other public safety apparatuses for police. Nobody wants to talk about diverting some of that money. But then when a police officer misbehaves, we say they're human. I understand that police officers are human. And if you can't handle a high-stress situation, please go be a used car salesman.
I agree.
So what I'm saying is, I get that people are human, but where you're signing up for a job that's supposed to, in a degree, make you more likely to de-escalate a situation to where you can apply the stuff that you've learned for a safe outcome for the citizens you're trying to protect. So the I'm a human thing, I cannot begin to accept that explanation as to why these things keep happening. Now, that's an aside. I would love to hear what you guys have to say, because Rachel asked a fantastic question. I would love to hear what you guys have to say about qualified immunity.
Absolutely. I think every officer should be held accountable. If they messed up, they got to pay for it. It comes with the territory. I agree with you 100%, Rachel. I agree 1,000% with it. That's the only way you're going to stop. Unfortunately, it's the only way you're gonna stop and hold and actually hold officers accountable for their actions. But also, with policing, listen, nothing easy about policing.
Nothing.
So even if you're making a decision instantaneously and it was the right decision, you're still gonna be talked about at. Well, you didn't have to kill him, even if it was a phenomenal good shoot. You're still going to have the people saying, well, you shouldn't have did that. Now, that's the only thing what bothers me. It's like, if I did the job like I'm supposed to have and made the right call when I had to, you still want to sue me?
Give me an example of a situation where you feel like...
It could be in a situation where there was a good shoot and somebody lost their life.
Can you think of it? Because we have dozens of examples of over the course of the... Like, can you think of any one of these that was a quote-unquote good shoot to where an officer was unfairly criticized for the way one of these things turned out? And I asked that question sincerely with no malice, because I'm interested in what do you think, give me one of these that was a good shoot to where you feel
I'll give a good example of one of our guys that we had on our podcast. He's a supervisor. he got involved in a foot pursuit. A gentleman, he got involved in with the foot pursuit, pulled out a firearm, pointed at him. He told him drop it. He didn't drop it. So he had incapacitated that individual. Everything by the book. Foot pursuit, drop the gun. Foot pursuit, drop the gun. Not listening. He incapacitated the individual. He's still trying to get, the family's still trying to sue that sergeant now. But why? Why? It was a good shoot.
Well, why? Because probably, why? Probably because they're grieving. Look, I don't know why they're doing what they're doing. And the reality is, if you train your gun, you don't have to be a cop. I got a shotgun under my bed. If you come in this crib right here and you put a gun on me, if I got that, you're going to sleep. Okay? So I get that.
You got
that,
the right to bear arms. I agree with you.
And I get that, and I understand that, right? I'm going to protect my family, protect my household. The reality of that is that the gun is where it is, where it needs to be. I'm not around here talking about making a big deal about wanting to hurt people or having guns. I grew up in a place where we had firearms, where we had weapons, and so I have one to defend my home, okay? I don't think anybody is talking about what you're talking about. And I get it. I understand it. I don't think that qualified immunity is meant for that. I don't think anyone's talking about that. I think if a situation where any American would be armed and has a gun on them and they can't talk to the person reacting with deadly force in that situation, nobody is going to begrudge you that, especially after an investigation proves whatever, whatever. But in these situations we're talking about, by and large, the overwhelming majority, we're talking about unarmed Black people. We're talking about Black people that were running. We're talking about Black people that were stopped for poverty crimes, like selling loose cigarettes or allegedly using a counterfeit 20. Killed, extinguished before our eyes. And those are layups. And so to me, I'm not even looking at it, and God forgive me for using those people's human lives as layups. I'm talking about, we can't use an exception of what if there's a good shoot. We're talking about the bad ones.
And I just agree with that. Yeah. I just gave you an example of why officers shouldn't get held civil liable if it's a good shoot. That's a great example because it's happening. And they're phenomenal shoots. But we're still being held liable. Why? Because we did our job. And we did it to a T. So I agree with these last two instances. I'm sorry, Rachel. You have something else you wanted to add?
No. Finish. It's a conversation. We don't have to do the whole
order thing.
Let's just talk.
Go ahead.
So we got 10 years on. You don't think we've been in those situations where we approach a guy that's selling loose cigarettes and the outcome came out beautiful, and that's why I never made news? I had guns pointed at me. I've been in fights, and it's the job. But we have the training. This is why we created the podcast. To also let everybody know that, yes, we are police officers. But in the 10 years, we have zero deaths under our belt because of the way we handle people.
Can I ask you a
and
question?
That's just the way we handle it.
So
here,
we're
just trained a little bit different. And we trust our training.
I'll tell you one thing.
I have a question. I'll ask you guys both this then. You have zero deaths, which is a shocking bar for success on the job, but...
Well, Van, it's not shocking because here in Baltimore City, I don't know if you know, but...
Cops are killing people all the time?
It's like, busy down here.
But cops are killing people in Baltimore?
No. Routinely, cops are dealing with one of the deadliest criminals that this country has to offer.
Fair enough.
And... Okay.
Go ahead. My bad.
And, you know, it's always a positive outcome because of the way we treat people.
It's all in how you say and how you say.
We've had, I don't even want to mention gangs, but we've had gang leaders see us and they're like, you know what? I respect you guys. Today's not the day. And it's a mutual respect, as crazy as it sounds. There's no need to poke the bear. You understand what I'm saying?
I'll ask you this. You say you have zero deaths in 10 years on. Can each of you say that you have zero brutality complaints?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
My phone is clear. I would like you to call our ID and ask them.
I'm just making sure.
We love what we do.
Van, we could walk through Baltimore City I go to Baltimore City all the time, right?
Yeah.
With no handgun. because I know I'm okay. Why?
Okay.
Because I know I've treated everybody I've come across with respect.
But is there a level of comfortability coming from you because of the way that you look? Because I think what we're seeing in a lot of these cases, sorry, that's my dog.
It's okay.
What I think we're seeing a lot is this, people feel automatic. There's this perceived threat coming from officers when they approach a certain person that they're pulling over or that they perceive to be more threatening than they are. You seem to be very comfortable because of where you started off talking about where you come from, who you are, how you present yourself, where maybe another officer feels a little bit more scared. Is there, I think I see a lot of people talking about racial sensitivity training or the lack thereof. I think that's an issue that we have yet to talk about right now in this conversation, because some people feel more like they're willing to put their hand on the trigger just because they feel that there's a perceived threat when there isn't one, just based off the way a person looks.
Right. So we have a good friend of ours. He's the Italian Stallion. That's what we call him. He's an Italian-American man who can go to any neighborhood in Baltimore City and be fine. Why? Because of the way he treats people. Respect. Italian, fair skin, everything. He's never had a problem because he treats everyone with respect.
Rachel, I agree 1,000% with you. But in order for there to be change, that's why I said it's good for our white brothers, our white sisters that haven't came and not used to the city, that don't understand the culture. It's good for them to get involved and dive right in, go out and introduce yourself. The only way you can get across that is by breaking that barrier. You got to have uncomfortable conversations to get across anywhere or to make a change. So I love, are you from this area? No, all right, come with me. We're going to go out. We're going to talk to the boys on the block. We're going to talk to our business owners. You got to get out of your comfort zone and talk to these people and bridge that gap and build that rapport. Because that's the only way things are coming together. And that's the only way you'll really see change. Because, it's funny. We had a lieutenant from the fire department. And we had him on the podcast, right? So everything went well. It was a great, the interview was great that we conducted. And then he got to the point where he said, you know, when I get out of work, I don't deal with police. I really don't like police. And we was like, huh? And he got over 21 years on. He's a lieutenant in the fire department. So I said, over your years of service, how do you still not like police? And he's like, well, you know, I had a situation when I was young and an officer made me, you know, I had to put my knees down and glass, and he made me get down face floor on the concrete. So I understood that.
It broke my heart.
And it's bad. And I said, yo, you carry that with you all these years, bro? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, it's unfortunate because I would think him being on the job for over 20 years, we work hand in hand with the fire department. So I would think, you know, the rapport and everything would be there, but people still carry that. And I understand that. But that's why, you know, that's another reason why our podcast was created, because we're all about building rapport and bridging the gap.
Right. It's interesting with the fire department. Like, if the fire department came over to your house to rescue a cat out of a tree and it ended up burning your house down, I don't think you'd ever forget that. Tell you guys a story real quick, and then I want to ask you a very direct question. When I was 15, I'm in my driveway. 15-year-old kid in my driveway.
What city?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Right? Okay.
So 15 of them in my driveway. I'm doing my homework, right? Cops come
on. I like
the way
you see the last comment there.
Yeah. cops come around. They see me. They say, stand up. You got anything on you? Pat me down, pat my pockets down and stuff like that. I'm like, what's happening? I'm in my driveway. When I say I'm in the driveway, I'm not like don't even go out. Like, I was on punishment. I couldn't leave off the house grounds. So I'm just wanted to be outside. I'm in the driveway, sitting down, doing my homework. Cops stand me up. They cuff me. Walk me over. Like do whatever. They're checking out whatever they have to check out. I'm like, I'm 15 years old. But at that time, I'm about 6'4 now. At that time, I'm probably like 6'1, 6'2. I fit some sort of description. They're asking me all kinds of questions and stuff. I didn't even know enough about the world to be scared. It wasn't until my father got wind of that it crystallized to me what a big deal that was. Hadn't done anything. Cuffed. and then let me go. Go back and sit down. My people lose it, right? For me, growing up, the cops were the predators. Like, the police were the ones. See all the violence that went on in South Baton Rouge? I understood that. What I didn't understand was why you would put me in handcuffs for doing my homework. And I give you guys $1 million worth of credit for coming on this podcast today, especially in the times that you're in, that we're in right now. Couldn't give you more credit. But I do not believe in policing anymore.
I really wish I did.
I wish I did.
You too, Rachel.
No one would want it to be this way. I wish I did, but I don't believe in it. Let me ask you one question. Baltimore City has a 500, and I am coming to Baltimore.
I'm dead serious.
I will, because we did a podcast on The Wire, and the people keep asking me to come down there. I am going to come to Baltimore. And when I come to Baltimore, I'm going to tap in with y'all for real.
Seriously. Yeah, we want to see y'all t-shirts, so we need your address as well.
No, right, but tap in. We'll take care of y'all.
So $550 million police budget in Baltimore City. I think it just got cut a little bit more. It might be haircut down to like 5'9", 5'10", or something like that. People talk about defunding or sort of not defunding, redirecting police dollars. Do you think it makes sense, Baltimore City, to have a $500 million police budget? Couldn't $250 million of that money be spent in areas where people need it to set up public safety commissions, to set up other things that enrich communities so that we're not just band-aiding these situations with more guns and more troops, that we're actually dealing with them from the ground up? When people say defund or divest from the police, why is that such an incredibly dirty word or dirty phrase to people that are supposed to want people to be safe? Of course, they would be more safe if there were more resources, right?
Absolutely. I don't think it's a dirty word. I just think we need to have a clear understanding on where this where the money's going to. Because I agree wholeheartedly, these young kids out here, they got no direction. They used to be PAL PAL centers. There's none of that here anymore. Hasn't been here for a long time. So I love that. Listen, I also want to implement boxing. Give them something to do. These kids need something. They need a place to go to after school. They need to know that they're loved. And that's not just from the police. That's from everybody. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. And that's true.
I do not mind if they cut out budget and then put in the money in a program where they're taking high school kids that maybe do not want to go to college, and they want to become an electrician or a plumber in a trade. But that's above our pay grade.
I mean, we got a harbor. Teach them how to fish.
Teach them how to fish. We had a Baltimore City candidate that was running for mayor. And he said, if we teach them how to fish, one kid will become a cook. One kid will become a chef. You see what I'm saying? One kid will buy a boat and actually be the fisherman. And we believe in that.
Wholeheartedly.
You can take the money out of my budget if I know kids are learning a trade. I'm absolutely with that. But, you know, certain things happen that's above our pay grade that, you know, we're not at the freedom to speak about.
Rach, you got anything else?
I just want to ask you a general question. When you, in light of what is currently happening right now in our country, when you look at cases like what happened in Virginia, when you look at what just happened in Brooklyn Center, when you look at what's happening currently in the trial in Minneapolis, are they to you more of a result of how policing works in America? Or does it have to do more with our ongoing struggles about race or around race in this country?
I think it's accumulation of everything. And police reform needs to be in every department. Because, of course, you know, old policing and traditions back then, I can't speak about that. I can only speak about the tradition that I'm in and the new style of policing, which makes sense. Because we're about, 6 years post Freddie Gray? We're the poster child for police reform. So the department has changed. And I love what we do. We love working in Baltimore City. It's phenomenal. I advise everybody to come out here. But I agree with you, Rachel. I think it takes everybody to come and make this change. And, you know, the build reform. Reform is great. It's only going to put the best product out there to serve and be that real agent for your department, and not do what you want to do, but do what you have to do and what's right, and do what's built in purpose for you, and follow out your policies and procedures.
Also, the community benefits out of that.
Of course,
you know they get the best product out there. You know they get the best help. So
I'll tell you, one of our episodes is what. Hey Van, look him up, Peanut King. Peanut King was, what can I say?
The biggest.
I do know who you're talking about.
The biggest.
I do know who you're talking about.
He came down.
Bro, he did 37 years flat federal. He got out 18 months ago, and he came and did an interview with us. Can I be blunt? Knowing he don't fuck with police at all. And he sat with us for about 2 hours. If you listen to the interview, the beginning, the first 20, 30 minutes was a little rocky because, of course, look at his background. Look at what he's did for a living.
He didn't trust us.
And now he's coming to two detectives that he don't even know from Adam. And as he sat and spoke with us, you can see the building rapport. About an hour into it, we had so much fun. And he understood what we was trying to do in bridging the gap and really getting out there because we come from it. Trust me.
He actually invited us.
He invited us. When he left, he came back 20 minutes later and stayed for another 2 hours.
He invited us because he's setting up a community like center. He invited us to be a part of it so that the little kids could see that, you know, not all police officers are bad.
But I love the conversing. I love the questions. What else you got? We cooking. What's up?
We're about to let y'all
That's
go.
What we doing.
So the last thing I'll say to y'all is this. I would like to believe in some of the stuff that you guys have said here today. American policing is either one or two things. It's either fundamentally and irreparably broken.
Right? Absolutely.
Or it's operating just as it was intended to the entire time.
I agree.
Both of those things are chilling. I don't know how we reconcile. You guys are on the ground there in Baltimore. And I don't know your hearts, but I know what we've talked about right now. The only thing I can ask is if you see people that look like me, people, period, being treated poorly by police, please, please put blood in front of blue. Put human beings in front of a shield or a badge or a uniform because they supposed to be protecting us.
Right.
Then we keep getting chalked out. So what I'm trying to say is, I don't know what the fuck got to happen, man, but something got to give in this whole situation, bro. Something
that's why I know you just met us, but that's what we stand on.
That's what we do every day. And that's what we preach to our fellow coworkers. We put blood before blue. We put respect before anything. And we look at everything, not as a color, but good or bad. And that's it.
There's no gray area.
Either you got a gun and you got to go to jail because, you know, you bothering, you know, Miss Ethel that's, you know, trying to go to the store. You got to go. But other than that, it's all either good and bad and blood before blue, always. And that's why we have such a great reputation in any neighborhood in this town.
I think it's going to take all of us, along with you and Rachel, you guys are doing, us as well. Let's continue to build. Let's continue to converse. Let's continue to reach other people. Because that's what it's about, ultimately. We should all be in this for the same common goal.
Absolutely.
And we don't mind it because we're the only ones doing this in this lane. You're not going to get the swag. You're not going to get the skin smelling good. You're not going to get none of that from nowhere else but us and how we bring it to you. It's raw, but it's truth. I guarantee you're not going to find another police podcast that talk how we talk.
All right, appreciate you, brothers, for stopping by today, man.
Seriously. Yes, appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Silverbackchronicles.com. We appreciate you.
Shout it out
we
again,
you.
So like real clean, so everybody know where can find y'all at?
www.silverbackchronicles.com. On Instagram is SilverbackPod, P-O-D. And don't forget, we appreciate you. We love you.
You guys got a red carpet. Come to the town. We'll take
care
of
you. Hey, Van and Rachel, come to Baltimore. I'm telling you, we
you
got a spot.
You said you was coming.
Fell's Point, we got a spot for you.
It's all right. I'm coming down there.
I like Baltimore.
I'm coming down there. I don't want to have to rat y'all out, though. I don't want to have to be, you know, I don't want to have to, you know what I mean? I don't want to, yeah, I don't.
You guys are with us, and they with us. That's it.
You good.
All right. All right, y'all. All right, peace, all right, y'all.
Thank you so much for being here.
Be safe. Thank you.
Peace and love.
Same to you.